You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome in to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat this Thursday evening, the Rockets are just about 24 hours removed from closing out their first round series. That's courtesy of their 122-104 win in Game 5 on Wednesday night at Toyota Center. Rockets getting the win behind a double-double from both Clint Capella and James Harden. Clint with 26 points, 15 boards. James, 24 points, 12 assists. And the Rockets closing out the Timberwolves with the gentleman's sweep that many of us expected, now awaiting their next opponent, either the Utah Jazz or the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's the 4-5 series in the West. Utah is up 3-2 after 5 games. The all-important Game 6 is tomorrow night, Friday night, in Utah, nationally televised. Either the Jazz will close it out, or it will go back to Oklahoma City for a Game 7, in which you'd have to think the Thunder would be fairly substantial favorites, considering that even spotting the Jazz a 25-point lead last night with barely over 20 minutes to go wasn't enough for Utah to get the victory in Oklahoma City. And in fact, the Thunder won going away, flipped it by 33 points in just over 20 minutes. Russell Westbrook actually outscoring the Jazz by himself, 33-28, in that stretch. So we're going to learn a lot tomorrow night from that game, and that's what we're going to talk about for the most part in today's show. We'll start with Oklahoma City, Utah. I shared some thoughts last night. We'll discuss that again, but not just that series, but the entire rest of the playoffs as it pertains to the Rockets, the very short-term future being round two, the likely longer-term future, which is the Western Conference Finals against New Orleans, or most likely Golden State, the other series in the West, and then the further out on the horizon, which is free agency this summer, and why some of the other series might have a little more link to the Rockets than you might think. If you want discussion about the Rockets, the X's and O's of their own playoff run, as I've said for a few days now, check out our archives, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone. We've got tons of shows here at Locked On Rockets, good interviews, recaps. So if you want more discussion on what happened games 1-5 of the Minnesota series, check out our archives. This one's going to be less about the Rockets directly and more about the other teams in the playoffs, what it means for Houston moving forward. So first segment, we touched on this to close out last night's recap show, but let's lead with Oklahoma City and Utah, because that to me is certainly the variable that's most closely associated with the Rockets, because, well, the winner plays Houston. Now, first things first, it impacts the time. If the Jazz win and close it out in Game 6, the series will start Sunday afternoon at Toyota Center. If it'll be a 2:30 game on ABC. If the Thunder win, the series won't start until Tuesday night. It'll be a TNT game, and of course, the Rockets will play either Utah or Oklahoma City, whoever wins the Game 7. I said on last night's show that I was wanting to play Utah for basketball reasons. Now I'm wanting to play them for personal reasons as well, because if you're in media like I am, these 8:30 games in which you don't even get home till after midnight, they're killers. And I'm sure many of you that are fans, if you're going to the games, you probably feel a little tired today as well. So just for personal reasons, I would love an afternoon ABC game. Also, the national exposure is good. So selfishly, I have my own reasons for wanting Utah to win Game 6. Beyond that, though, I really think that if you want to play Utah, you need to see them win Game 6. I've seen some talk that, well, just hope they go to 7 games and then deal with whoever the winner is because they'll be tired. Look, I don't really think one extra game, 2 extra days, I guess 1 practice in the game, is really going to swing the second round series, one in which the Rockets would be favored either way. To me, you want the matchup, and I don't think going to Game 7 should outweigh the other factors, because the reality, if it goes to Game 7, I think you're probably going to get Oklahoma City. Now, if you want to mount a case for Utah, you could point out they won Game 2 in Oklahoma City, and they also won a Game 7 on the road in the first round last year when they beat Chris Paul's LA Clippers. So it's not unprecedented. However, I do think the Thunder found something in the second half of that Game 5. Less Carmelo Anthony, more switching on defense, and a bit of a correlation there because you're more able to switch when Carmelo isn't out there. Russell Westbrook, Paul George, they finally seem to get some continuity going. And ultimately, if you go back into that same building and the best Jazz perimeter player being Donovan Mitchell, a rookie, it's a lot to ask to win a Game 7 under those circumstances. Not impossible, but I would say it's pretty doubtful. So if you want to play Utah, even if it means they have one less game under their belt, you need to cheer for them to win in Game 6. And by the way, if they win that Game 6, it's a pretty quick turnaround. They play late Friday night. The game starts at 9:30 Houston time, which we all know really means about 9:45. It's going to end after midnight Houston time tomorrow night. And if the Jazz win, then they've got to turn around, get on a plane to Houston the very next day, and play a game at 2:30 Sunday afternoon, which will feel like earlier than that, considering they're coming from the West and coming across the time zone. So either way, whether it ends in 6 or 7, I think the Rockets, having closed out their series on Wednesday, are going to be the beneficiary. So I don't think you need to get too caught up and too cute looking at the semantics of exactly how many days, how many games it is. Reality, go for the better matchup. And in my opinion, it's Utah. I said reasons last night, but to sum up, I just think there's less upside. Utah, the team chemistry is great. The coaching is great. The culture, I believe they are the new age Spurs. Tip your hat to Quinn Snyder. But ultimately, especially with Donovan Mitchell as a rookie, it's tough to see the offensive upside there. I keep going back to the game in February when the Rockets were on the second night of a back-to-back, a brutal stretch for them after playing in altitude at Denver the night before. And yet, even with the Rockets' just dead legs, the Jazz just did not have the scoring, and it was stunningly easy to kind of scheme Gobert out of the game in the second half, especially when Luke Bamute, Ryan Anderson were able to get going. So, in my opinion, the Rockets, up front, as far as dealing with Gobert, you've got so many different types. We talked about the growth of Clint Capella this playoff run. He's been your most important player, and he goes into the series feeling good about himself. Then if you want to match with power, you've got Nene, who showed you something in the Minnesota series that maybe you didn't know you had. You've got the spacing of Ryan Anderson. There's a decent shot that Luke Bamute, if you want to go ultra small, you can go without a center at all, roll with one of those tuck wagon lineups because you'll have Luke back to occupy some of those forward minutes. If you want to play PJ at the center more, courtesy of Kelly Eco, we heard today on Twitter, Kelly, a good reporter with ESPN Houston and a number of other organizations, that Luke says his shoulder is feeling good and he could be back as early as game one, if not game one, certainly at some point in this series. So to me, when you consider Utah's lack of perimeter explosion, Ricky Rubio, Donovan Mitchell, now Mitchell is great, but he's a rookie, Jay Crowder, it's easier to match up with than a team with Russell Westbrook and Paul George. And for whatever reason, Carmelo Anthony, even though he's been a big negative for the Thunder this series, he's played well against the Rockets this year for whatever reason. And, of course, Steven Adams in the middle, he's not Rudy Gobert, but he's not far behind. He's very, very good in his own right. So to me, Utah, they're very well coached. You tip your hat to what they do. But Oklahoma City, there's just more upside. Now, do I think they could bring it 4 times out of 7? No. There's a reason they're down 3-2 in this series. There's a reason it took them till the final week of the year to even get in the playoffs, period. They've never had consistency this year, and I find it hard to believe they could find it 4 times in 7 games against the 65-win Rockets. But ultimately, they could make you sweat a little more than you would like to, especially with Golden State seeming to get some, I don't want to say an easy draw, because New Orleans has shown more upside than expected. We'll discuss that in the second segment. But if you're going to go up against Golden State with Stephen Curry appearing poised to return, he went through a practice today for the Warriors, he's questionable for Game 1. As with Luke, if it's not Game 1 for Curry, it's going to be pretty soon. It's going to be at some point in the second round, early second round at that. So you don't want to get pressed. I'm not picking Oklahoma City to beat Houston. I don't think they would. I just think there are individual games, or even if Houston plays well, there's enough talent in Oklahoma City. We've seen what they've done against the Warriors this year, the Raptors, some of the NBA's best teams, that ultimately I feel like Utah is more controllable. It won't always be pretty. It might require grinding it out and playing a slower pace, but ultimately I just don't see the upside to execute in the fourth quarter. When Oklahoma City got desperate last night and the defense ratcheted it up when they were facing essentially their own mortality, Utah scored just 28 points in the last 20-plus minutes of the game. Now, yes, there was some foul trouble for Rudy Gobert. I understand that, and that played some role. But ultimately, I don't see the perimeter explosion, and especially what little there is, it's in the form of Donovan Mitchell, and ultimately, as great of a story as it is, it's an awful lot to ask a rookie in this type of setting to do it in the second round of the playoffs against James Harden and Chris Paul. Maybe he's the exception to the rule. He certainly has been to this point. But on paper, I think Oklahoma City can push you more. And because of that, I think it's in your benefit to cheer for Utah in Game 6. Selfishly, I like the 2:30 start on Sunday. Also, it's a quick turnaround for the Jazz. But just for basketball reasons, if they don't close it out in Game 6, if they lose a Game 6 at home, all after blowing a 25-point lead in Oklahoma City with 20 minutes to go, and then not even having it be a particularly close loss. They lost by 8, outscored by 33 over the final 20-plus minutes. I don't see how, after those two things, that you could have much confidence at all that Utah could go into Oklahoma City on Sunday and win that game. So to me, Game 6, Utah-OKC, that's going to be the series. Pick the matchup you want, and in my opinion, I won't say it's an easy choice because Utah's proven enough. They've been a top five team, and really from the midpoint of the season onward, they're really good. They're very well coached. I have a ton of respect for them, but ultimately, I think there's less upside there than a team in Oklahoma City with Russell Westbrook and Paul George. And in my opinion, if you want to play them in the first round, and conceivably it could start Sunday at 2:30, the ABC game, again, that's what happens if Utah wins Game 6, then to me, yeah, you need to be cheering for Utah in Friday night's Game 6, because if it goes 7, my bet is that it's going to be Oklahoma City. And for now, that's all the Rockets can do is sit and wait. They do have a practice Friday morning, I believe, starting around 11 or so. We'll see if there's any news. We'll see what Luke Bamute is doing there. But the Rockets, they're just doing that to stay sharp. Otherwise, in terms of matchups, they're waiting to see because it's going to be very different depending on who they play. Utah tends to be, I won't say they're a particularly slow pace. They can be, but there's more athleticism on the perimeter than you might think. And, of course, Ricky Rubio, they can push it, a very smart point guard in the open floor. Whereas Oklahoma City, boy, you have so many athletes there. Now, of course, they do like to execute in the half court, but they go about it in very different styles in terms of the isolation versus the ball movement. Defensively, Utah, I would say, is a superior team, but Oklahoma City has more, I would say, variables that on a given night can be overwhelming. For example, Paul George, he's the kind of guy I think that, I don't know if he's capable of guarding James Harden for an entire series. That's a lot to ask. And of course, lots of times he may get switched off anyway, but he can be so dynamic in a given moment that he can be really scary. Whereas the Jazz is a little more of a team approach. And of course, it's all about funneling towards all their big bodies inside, the likes of Rudy Gobert, Derek Favors, et cetera, et cetera. So there's lots of differences between the two teams. Ultimately, the Rockets tomorrow aren't going to be able to really prep for one or the other because they have to wait and see how the series turns out. I think tomorrow they go back to practice, essentially just wanting to stay fresh. They're wanting to control what they can control. They had their best shooting night of the series in Game 5, and hopefully the guys that were slow to get going in this series, Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, Eric Gordon, they build on that. They stay in rhythm, and then starting as soon as Saturday, maybe you have to wait until Monday, then you can start implementing the actual game plans for whoever comes out of that Utah-Oklahoma City series. Now, I wanted to lead with the Utah-Oklahoma City discussion because that's what's next on the agenda for the Rockets. It's in the immediate future, possibly, again, as soon as Sunday at 2:30, you could play the Jazz if they win Game 6. In terms of bigger picture, it may actually be what happens in the Golden State-New Orleans series starting Saturday that has the biggest, I would say, change effect on the Rockets' championship odds, which is, of course, the point of all this, the Rockets finally getting their third world championship and their first in over 20 years. Because this season has always been about the Warriors. Going into the year, of course, they've won the Western Conference the last 3 years, defending champion last year, and have won two of the past three. The 1 year they didn't, they got to Game 7 of the NBA Finals. And now with Kevin Durant on top of the existing core, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, yada yada, it's probably the most talented team in the history of the league. So if Golden State were to somehow lose, oh boy, would that open up the bracket for the Rockets. But it's not just that they have to lose. And let's be real, they're probably not. It would be great if New Orleans were somehow able to pull the upset. And as great as they're playing, they're certainly no match for a Houston team that won 65 games in the regular season. But ultimately, just because New Orleans took four from a Portland team that already was reeling going into the playoffs, I'm not buying in that they're able to beat Golden State four times out of seven without home court. Especially because, as mentioned, Steph Curry practiced today. He's questionable for Game 1, so he seems like he's very close to returning. I think it's less about New Orleans, and it's more about what you learn about Golden State. Because if Golden State gets pushed, if Steph Curry isn't 100%, those are things that ultimately may have the biggest to do with your long-term odds of winning a title. Because whether Houston plays Oklahoma City or Utah, yeah, it's interesting to discuss. There are different matchups in terms of which you play, different styles, et cetera, et cetera. But you're going to be favored over either of them. And honestly, if Houston were to lose a second-round series to Oklahoma City or Utah, while it wouldn't be the end of the world, it wouldn't be devastating, it would certainly be disappointing. It's not a scenario you should plan for after you win 65 games. It's no disrespect. Those are quality teams. It certainly would not be one of the all-time great upsets if it were to happen. But the Rockets are better than those teams. The one team that you may not be able to confidently say that about is Golden State. So in an ideal world, they lose, but I'm taking the approach of I'll believe it when I see it. And as far as I've seen some on Twitter that, well, if Golden State somehow lost or Curry was hurt with a great asterisk, I don't care. I have no interest at all in what Skip Bayless or Colin Cowherd or any of these clowns say or whatever on NBA Twitter. If the Rockets get the trophy, I don't care what means it takes them to get it. The trophy is equally sweet no matter who you play, no matter what the route is, in my opinion. That's just my take. If you feel differently, that's certainly your prerogative. I'm not meaning to degrade anyone with that. I'm just explaining my perspective as host of Locked On Rockets, how I'm looking at this. So yes, in an ideal world, I think New Orleans would be able to pull it off. However, I find it doubtful. Again, without home court, there's a decent bit of inexperience there, and ultimately just one all-star caliber player in Anthony Davis versus at least three in Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and probably Steph Curry as well. The Pelicans do have their role players stepping up, playing extremely well. There's a lot of depth, and Jrue Holiday, Rajon Rondo, Nikola Mirotic, these guys are all playing the best they've played in quite some time. Even hashtag playoff Rondo is back, so I would love to see them execute, but ultimately, we'll deal with them. I find it to be a waste of resources to speculate too much on a Houston-New Orleans matchup right now. I think the far and away likely scenario is the inevitable Rockets-Warriors Western Conference Finals that we've been talking about for months now, and we're now only one round from seeing that come to reality. So as far as what you can take out of the series, I think in an ideal world, New Orleans early in the series would be able to take a game or two, at least make Golden State play maybe six games instead of getting an easy four or five gamer. You'd like to see them, especially with Steph Curry coming off the injury, have to expend a little more effort, at least the same effort that you do, because on paper, Utah and Oklahoma City would seem to be a little better than New Orleans. Now, with New Orleans as hot as they appear in that sweep of Portland, maybe it's a case where the paper advantage, in terms of Houston having a slightly tougher opponent, is trumped by the chemistry of what's going on right now. We'll have to wait and see. As far as the basketball, I don't know if you're going to be able to look at New Orleans, Golden State, and say, well, here's something that Houston can copy, because the way New Orleans runs things and the way Houston runs things, very, very different. New Orleans, of course, it starts with Anthony Davis, and then on the perimeter with Jrue Holiday, who's like a glove, essentially like a souped-up version of Pat Beverly, as we learned in the Minnesota series. The Rockets don't really have that on the perimeter. That was one of the only things that got them in trouble with against the Timberwolves, was not having that guy that could be a matchup problem, because you know Jrue Holiday is going to be all over Steph Curry like a glove, trying to test out that knee after the grade 2 MCL sprain to test out exactly how well he could move. And ultimately, the Rockets don't have that guy. Now, maybe with Luka Mute back, you can use him in somewhat of the same ways, but certainly he's not a guard, so we need to appreciate the differences there. But in general, the Pelicans' perimeter approach tends to, in terms of their defense, it tends to start more with the guards, whereas with Houston, you're talking about more long, lanky wings. Offensively, they tend to run a lot through Anthony Davis out of the high post, as opposed to the Rockets, which, of course, run things through James Harden, Chris Paul, that high pick and roll. Now, I suppose you can potentially draw some parallels between Rajon Rondo and Chris Paul, two very traditional point guards in terms of how they see and manage the floor. But in general, Houston and New Orleans, both good teams, but fairly different styles. So I don't know if you're going to be able to watch New Orleans and Golden State and say, well, here's something that Houston can do. Because, well, when New Orleans is running out of Anthony Davis in that high post with Nikola Mirotic spacing the floor from the top, I don't know if, and making plays off the dribble, I don't know if that's a really a parallel for what the Rockets have up front when they're starting with, you know, Clint Capela, P.J. Tucker, whatever it may be, Tucker being primarily a, well, I don't want to say he's only a corner shooter. He did make at least one from the break in Wednesday's Game 5, which was pretty big. But the point is, these are two different teams. The thing that I think you can take something out of is Steph Curry, because whether he's 80%, 90%, 100%, 70%, yeah, the margin between the Rockets and the Warriors, it's close enough that that could very well be the difference, just as it was in 2016, the one year that the Warriors ultimately lost in Game 7 to the Cavaliers, and they almost lost in the Western Conference Finals to the Thunder when they were down 3-1, and if not for a Klay Thompson miracle in Game 6, they go out 4-2. Steph Curry came back, and that was after a grade 1 MCL injury. This is a grade 2. And even after a grade 1, he was still very good. He averaged, I believe, 26 points in the playoffs after that injury, 45% from the field, 40% from 3. But it was down because that was a season in which he averaged over 30 a game. He averaged like 50% from the field, 45% from 3, just otherworldly efficiency. He was not quite the same guy. Woj had some stories in the Western Conference Finals. I remember quoting anonymous sources around the Thunder saying that they knew Steph Curry was not the same guy, that he was limited. That was a big part of the Thunder getting off to that 3-1 lead. And then in the finals, everyone remembers in Game 7 when he could not shake Kevin Love. The shiftiness that defines Steph Curry, that makes him more than a shooter. What makes him electric is how he can use his quickness, his shiftiness, to create space for that jumper. And even against Kevin Love, he was not able to do that. So Steph Curry is going to return. I never bought into the narrative that, well, his season could end with this. No, it means too much to them. He's too much of a competitor. He's going to come back. But this series is going to tell you a lot. And what I would caution against, there's going to be a lot of people taking out a magnifying glass and breaking down everything he does in Game 1 or whatever the first game it is that he returns. And I don't really think that's going to tell you that much about the status that he's going to be at in the conference finals. Because Game 1, if he plays well, a lot of it may just be adrenaline. Think back to, again, the parallel coming back to in the 2016 playoffs when he suffered his grade 1 MCL sprain the first round, slipped on Donatas Matiunas' sweat at Toyota Center of all things. First game, he came back, he had 40 against Portland in the semis. It was Game 4, and I think in the fourth quarter especially, he just took over the game. And everybody thought, oh, wow, he's back, it's over. And then, as discussed, it wasn't. From then on out, there was a clear decline in his efficiency, his numbers. So that first game, there's so much adrenaline running through him, the team, and if he returns in Game 1 or Game 2, certainly in the entire arena out in Oakland, if he plays well, it may just be that. Conversely, if he plays poorly, the guys have played basketball since March 23rd. That might be the reason. So I caution looking at the first game that Curry plays, be it for better or for worse, and making a big deal out of, well, this proves he's going to be great, or this proves that he's compromised. Because there are a ton of other factors at play when you're talking about Steph Curry's return after missing more than a month with a grade 2 MCL injury. What you want to look for throughout that series is how does he and that knee respond to playing on it after playing a couple of days? Does it swell up? Is he trusting it? Because the first game, he may get through on adrenaline, and conversely, as I said, if he misses, it may just be rust because his technique is off after not really playing in any sort of serious setting. Sure, he's shot the ball, but in terms of on the move, after moving side to side, the shiftiness we talked about, we're going to have to wait and see. But it's how that knee responds to game action in the days after that that I think is going to tell you much more about the percentage he's at, 70, 80, 90, 100, whatever it is. So the deeper you go into that New Orleans series, I think that's what you want to watch, is how Steph Curry's knee responds as that series progresses. And then hopefully New Orleans can steal a game or two along the way and push Golden State. I don't think it's reasonable for them to beat them in a 7-game series. But if they can even take a game or two, and one of the first two games in Golden State would be optimal for a lot of reasons. Steph Curry might not play at all. He's still questionable as I'm recording this. Even if he does, he might be at his most rusty for the reasons we've discussed. And for New Orleans, for a team that's relatively inexperienced in this spot versus Golden State, who's been there, done that so many times, New Orleans, I think, needs a confidence booster more than Golden State does. If they can get one of those first two games, then it makes it realistic that maybe they could take this 6 and even in a crazy world, 7 games. Whereas if Golden State, even though they're home games, if they go up 2-0, then all of a sudden the narrative of inevitability starts building around those two teams. And for a relatively young team in New Orleans that's already wildly overachieved expectations this season, after the Marcus Cousins injury, some folks wondered if they could even get to the playoffs. They got to the playoffs, they got a sweep. If they go down 2-0, there might be some degree of they're just happy to be there rather than truly believing. So I think ultimately you want to see beyond how Steph Curry looks. Well, can Golden State be pushed any? And in my opinion, the opportunity to do that, even in Golden State, is those first two games. Because all of a sudden, if they can get one of those, then yeah, you put a little bit of pressure on. And who knows, even if, beyond just playing 6 or 7 games, if you make them play high-stress games, the likes of Draymond, Clay, Andre Iguodala, the veterans that have been there, because the thing to keep in mind with Golden State, they have been on so many long playoff runs, 3 years in a row. It's essentially like they played an extra season in there. So you talk about some of these veterans that have struggled in terms of their efficiency this year, especially the Iguodala, Draymond's to an extent. It might be the mileage piling up from these years. So if you can all of a sudden stress them out a little bit in round two, that's something to look for. I'd be thrilled if New Orleans could actually take 4 out of 7. Don't really expect it to be likely, but can they take one of those first two games, make it a series, and how does Steph Curry look if he returns? Again, questionable for game 1. That, to me, is what you're looking for, your key storylines in that series. And now to close out the podcast, let's transition to everything else. And what I mean by everything else is how could it affect the Rockets down the line? Because it's not going to be, we've covered the two Western series, which is the next round, Houston plays Utah OKC in round 2, and then the Golden State New Orleans winner in the Western Conference Finals if Houston advances through round 2. The NBA Finals, look, you can speculate about how Houston matches up with Toronto, Philadelphia, Cleveland, whoever the possibilities out east are, but I'm not getting too bogged down in that. First off, you know, you're looking multiple series away at that point, and the Rockets are better than all of those teams. I mean, there are some matchups that are slightly better than others, but if the Rockets are able to get through the Warriors and then lose to an Eastern Conference team, it's less about the matchup and more something going wrong in Houston, in my opinion. So when you look at the other series, the interesting angles to me are not so much the playoffs, but the offseason. What happens if Houston is big game hunting, if Houston does not win the title and needs to acquire a big name free agent, LeBron at the front of the list, but could even be Paul George too. Talk about him in a few minutes as well. What gives you the best scenario for the Rockets to be seen as the most viable destination this summer? We've discussed LeBron ad nauseum. The idea is that Cleveland loses. Now, it looks like they're going to survive in the first round. They're up 3-2. Indiana would have to win a game. Well, they'd have to stay alive in game 6, then win a game 7 at Cleveland. Not impossible. That would be the ideal scenario. Probably more realistically, Cleveland against top-seeded Toronto, assuming Toronto is able to advance in round 2 or in round 3 against Philadelphia, who just seems to have an inevitability to them right now, having won 20 of their last 21 games. So much top-heavy talent in Philadelphia, young, all peaking at the right time, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, all those types of things. So I think, first things first, you want LeBron to lose. And I think beyond Cleveland losing, because Cleveland losing before the finals would be the first time LeBron hasn't been in the finals in like 8 years, I think you would also prefer maybe Philadelphia going pretty far. Now, Philadelphia is set up well regardless, but if they get to the conference finals, the NBA finals, then I think it makes it all the more inevitable that they are the team of the East for the foreseeable future. And LeBron and that ragtag group he has in Cleveland, how do they get over the hump? That's what you want him to wonder. So ideally, first, you need Cleveland to lose, because if Cleveland gets to the finals, well, you could make a case that if somehow they can overcome Toronto, who won 59 games with a crazy margin, and Philadelphia, despite playing that well, maybe LeBron can make it work there. So you need Cleveland, I think, to lose first and foremost. Still plenty of opportunity for them to do that. I certainly don't think they have looked especially impressive in this Indiana series. And beyond that, I think Philadelphia winning kind of firmly cements the legacy that it's the 76ers conference for the foreseeable future. Now, I understand that you can also conversely from there say, well, if Philadelphia wins, is that a negative? Because Philadelphia, they're going to be going after LeBron, Paul George, those guys themselves, and they're going to be pretty attractive. They are. And I would respond to that by saying, well, they're going to do that anyway, and they're already going to be attractive. Whether they win or not, I think ultimately their pitch is the same. Look, you come here and you're going to be surrounded by all this young talent. I think where the Rockets could have a leg up if they need to go after a LeBron or a Paul George, is that the Rockets, they have contemporaries in James Harden and Chris Paul that are more of the age of Paul George, LeBron James, those types. Like last summer, so many wanted Chris Paul to go to San Antonio, and they were speculating about Chris and Kawhi teaming up. Well, there was a 7+ year age gap there. Chris and Kawhi did not really have that much of a relationship basketball-wise, off the court, whereas James Harden and Chris Paul, they were good friends. They knew each other through Team USA. They were more contemporary. So I think ultimately the Rockets, James Harden, Chris Paul, two guys that are in the prime of their careers being right around the same time frame, I think that might be a little more appealing than Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, guys that are younger. I'm not saying X's and O's that the Rockets have the easiest pitch. I'm just saying I think the same thing that appealed to Chris Paul, which was partially culture in Houston, that's what the Rockets could sell compared to Philadelphia as well. Now, in terms of route to getting one of those players, we've discussed it before. We've got plenty of archives here at Locked On Rockets. But the idea is that if Cleveland is convinced that LeBron's going to leave anyway, then a package that the Rockets could offer, headlined by Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker, and salary filler, or you could rope in a third team and have Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson go to a third team, Rockets sending draft picks to make the math work. But the point is, Eric Gordon is a really, really good basketball player, not even 30, on a reasonable contract, and that's probably a better scenario for Cleveland or even Oklahoma City than watching one of those guys go and leave you for nothing in return. So that's why the Rockets, even though there's not really an avenue for the Rockets to have full max cap room like there is for Philadelphia, there is a case where the Rockets could get in the game, because an Eric Gordon plus package, yeah, it's a lot more attractive to Cleveland or Oklahoma City if they're losing a star than watching one of those guys go for nothing in return. Now, I want to back up a little bit. I should have led by saying this, but in an ideal world, this isn't necessary. And in a perfect world, the Rockets go through the playoffs, they win the title, and everything the Rockets do this offseason is just built around keeping this great team together. And maybe it'll work out that way. That's my ideal. They win round two, round three, the NBA Finals. They beat the Warriors, maybe even convincingly. And then it's just all about keeping the team, the chemistry, the talents together. I hope that's what happens. However, until it does, you have to keep an open mind to the reality that, hey, there's a reason the Warriors have won the West the last 3 years. There's a reason they won the NBA title last year. There's a reason they were the far and away title favorites this year, because it's probably the most talented team, at least perception-wise, in the history of the league. So if the Rockets were to lose to the Warriors, it'd be pretty easy to understand why. The Rockets, as great as the chemistry is, as great as the coaching is, led by Mike D'Antoni, maybe they just don't have quite as much top-heavy talent as the Warriors, maybe the most talented team in the history of the sport. So that's why LeBron James, Paul George, you have to keep in mind the top free agents this summer. If the Rockets fall short, well, they're still going to be a very hot destination team playing as well as they have this year. Everyone knows how fun this Houston Rockets team is, especially under Mike D'Antoni. So they're viable. And there's a path financially, because other than Ryan Anderson, the contracts on this team are all pretty desirable. It's not like you have that many albatrosses out there. So you could make a sign-and-trade offer that is better for a team like Cleveland or even Oklahoma City than losing a star for nothing. And that's another reason why, in my opinion, I'll lead with LeBron, because we've discussed LeBron and the Rockets a ton over the last few months. Potentially, I could see Paul George being an option as well. And even more so if Oklahoma City loses in the first round, which, as I said in the first segment, I want to happen for immediate basketball reasons, because I think Utah in round two is a slightly easier opponent, at least one with less upside, I would say. But also, if Oklahoma City loses in round one, it's hard to see a scenario, in my opinion, where Paul George chooses to stay there. He'll be an unrestricted free agent. He can go where he wants to go. And a lot of people have speculated that LA, the Lakers, would be the choice, because he's got a lot of ties to LA. But if he is not able to get any other star to go with him, then all of a sudden, he might have to look elsewhere if he wants to compete with, say, the Warriors if they win again. And Houston all of a sudden could be a pretty appealing spot. And I'm sure some will say, well, would Sam Presti deal with Daryl Morey again? They're in the Western Conference, yada, yada. Well, again, with the Lakers being so viable, would Oklahoma City, especially with Russell Westbrook signed to the max in the middle of his career, would they really prefer Paul George walking for nothing as opposed to a package starting with Eric Gordon and a few other role players? It's hard for me to see that, especially because Oklahoma City would be pretty much capped out regardless. So it's not like they could then, you know, use George's savings and reallocate them elsewhere, especially because with Russell Westbrook signed at the max and in the middle of his career, it's not like really punting and waiting for a few years, rebuilding is on the table. So as crazy as it sounds, I could see Houston being a potentially attractive sign and trade partner for Oklahoma City as well. Now, hopefully none of those things are necessary. I hope, as I said, the Rockets win it with this group. If for some reason they don't, then you have to keep an open mind. And we know Daryl Morey, he will go big game hunting. He always does. So what positions you best for Paul George and LeBron James? Well, ideally, the Rockets win the second round. That goes without saying, because you want the Rockets to look attractive as possible. The best exit for the Rockets, if they don't win a title, is to lose to the Warriors, in which the Rockets look incredibly good, but just, unfortunately, after Kevin Durant went there, just not as talented as the most talented team in NBA history. It sucks, but that would be the best way to massage a loss, in my opinion, which is that, you know what, you're really, really good. They're just ungodly talented. And maybe that happens, but if it does, it makes it all the more easier for the Rockets to sell a big-time star like LeBron or Paul George to come. And beyond the Rockets positioning themselves well, because, of course, you always want what's best for the Rockets on the court, well, watch Cleveland. Watch what happens when they lose. If it's for the finals, I think it's a pretty easy case to get LeBron out there. And Paul George, especially if they lose in round one, and given his long-documented affinity for bigger markets, we've talked about Los Angeles, but I think Oklahoma City in particular is a tough sell for a lot of NBA players long-term, especially after playing just 1 year there. I think with Westbrook, it's a little easier because you had so many years culture built in. Houston being a big-time market where players want to play, you could see them in the running for Paul George as well. I think LeBron would be the priority, but if he didn't work out, there's no reason why you couldn't talk to Oklahoma City and say, hey, would you prefer this, rather than just watch Paul walk to Los Angeles for nothing in return. And I think it's potentially enough to get you in the game. Again, last thing I'll say before wrapping up, I hope none of these are necessary. I hope Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, PJ Tucker, the contracts we're talking about to facilitate the type of sign-and-trade moves that it would take to get a guy like LeBron or Paul that's making $25, $30-plus million a year, it would take a lot. So the types of players you would have to involve, I hope they go out and play well. They certainly did in Game 5 and win you a ring this year. And at that point, I won't say that the Rockets would never consider, even after winning a ring, because it's Daryl Morey, but I think generally they'd be pretty happy with where they are, and I think you'd see the focus on just keeping the group together for the most part. But if they don't, then yeah, keep an eye on those guys, the two biggest on the market this summer, LeBron and Paul George. What happens with them? And the earlier they go out, the better. I think maybe in an ideal world, Philly doesn't make it to the finals because they are going to be your big competition in terms of contending teams in the market for those big guns. But ultimately, I don't really see Philly, in terms of their free agency pitch, for Houston competing against Philly, it's going to be about the culture either way. So I'm not sure how much the round exactly matters in terms of Houston trying to make a pitch for LeBron or Paul or whoever it may be versus Philly, because Houston's pitch for those guys is going to be pretty much the same as they made for Chris Paul last summer, which is that, hey, you've got more in common with me. We're closer in terms of a similar spot in our careers. You have more comfort, more familiarity with me. And ultimately, I hope Houston would have the same advantage on one of the big guns that they go after this summer that they did relative to, say, San Antonio last year, who used Kawhi Leonard as the focal point of their pitch, a much younger Kawhi Leonard. And by the way, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, a lot younger even than Kawhi, to go after Chris Paul unsuccessfully a season ago. Anyway, I think that's enough speculation for one show. Apologies for running a little long, but you guys know how I can get when I get in off-season mode. And this will be my one off-season show. Well, not even a full off-season show. I also talked about the next couple of rounds of the playoffs. But we'll get back to the individual X's and O's, recaps, day in, day out. I even have a practice recap tomorrow. We'll see what happens when the Rockets get back to the gym. I assume it's going to be just to, you know, stay in rhythm. But maybe we have some surprising news with Luke Bamute. We'll have to wait and see. But regardless, soon enough, we'll get back to the nitty-gritty. Games could start as soon as Sunday. If not Sunday, then Tuesday. That's going to be the start of the second round. And of course, after we learn the opponent, that could be as early as late Friday night. Then we'll do a show with at least one, maybe multiple experts from the other side and start to break down in a little more depth how the Rockets match up with the Jazz or the Thunder. So until then, I guess hope all of you get some rest because we've all had some late nights of late. And playoff series, even if you win them by a lot, they're stressful. So the Rockets, they don't play for at least 4 days. So hopefully we can all enjoy those off days. Well, I guess just three, because Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you could play as early as Sunday, but at least three off days. So hopefully we can all kind of recharge and then be ready to go on Sunday. So, yeah, again, hope all of you guys have awesome weeks. And if you want any more information from me in the meantime, beyond what I give you in the scope of the podcast, best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget our website, lockedonrockets.com. We've got a Facebook, facebook.com/lockedonrockets. And, of course, email, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also, I mentioned our platforms earlier, but iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, et cetera, et cetera. You can search for Locked On Rockets, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review if you've not already. That's how we remain viable to advertisers. But while you're doing that, check out other shows across the NBA and NFL as well. There's a great network of content here at the Locked On Podcast Network. And of course, we've got other NBA playoff teams covered, and we also have the NFL covered. The Houston Texans, the NFL draft starts tonight. They've got a Locked On Texans podcast hosted by my friends Robert Land and Brian Patterson. They'll be doing a recap of the Texans' activities throughout the next 3 days. May not be tonight, since the Texans don't have a first-round pick, courtesy of the Deshaun Watson trade, but they should be very active starting tomorrow. So if you want insight on what they, a preview of what they may do, or a recap of what they actually do get done this weekend, then check out Locked On Texans as well. For now, though, I will sign off. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. Thanks, as always, to y'all for tuning in, and we'll be talking again very soon once the round two opponent is known, or, well, if we don't know the round two opponent, then we'll talk about what happens in Game 6 and what to come in the Game 7, the hypothetical in this case, between Oklahoma City and Utah, what that would mean for your Rockets. For now, though, have a good end to your week, and thanks again for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team.